Blog Talk Radio.
You are looking live at Sparty Talk. Satchmo and DB rolling at you on a wintry evening. I am Satchmo, coming to you from an undisclosed location in North America. Joining me, as always, is the thin man, DB. Greetings, DB.
You are looking live at Spartan Stadium. It's the Hawkeyes and the Spartans.
Oh, you love the looking live intro, DB.
I love the looking live.
Oh, that arises. You are looking live at the podcast for all things Michigan State sports. There will be a tribute somewhere in this to Brent Musburger, or as DB and I are personally occasionally referred to him, Went. But we'll talk a little bit about Brent Musburger and his retirement from ESPN. We're going to be looking at Michigan State's basketball team and their life on the NCAA tournament bubble. Talking about a little bit of Michigan State hockey. We're going to touch on the death of Mary Tyler Moore, cultural icon, someone who's probably too young for this demo, Stevie. So as they say in the business, we'll be losing the demo, but that's okay. We're going to talk about her anyway.
That's why we're doing that at the end.
So you don't have to worry about it. It's sort of the cultural impact of it. And so we'll discuss that. And we'll play a fun little game. That's right. Game time. Game show time at Sparty Talk. Fact or alternative fact. So it'll be up to DB to decide whether what I'm throwing out at him is a fact or an alternative fact. So we'll have fun with that. Who says you can't have fun with politics? Anyway, these will be sports related questions, so don't worry, don't be switching that dial or switching that podcast dial on us. It'll be fun, so it's going to be a good show. But before we get to the hoops, let's begin with this sort of odd bit of news that sort of came up from sort of under the radar. It happened last week, or maybe 8 or 9 days ago. About 9 days ago, but Michigan State's athletic director, Mark Hollis, confirmed he's resigned his position from the vice chair of the Lead One group. The Lead One group is basically the Athletics Directors Association. That's what it used to be known as, all the D1 athletic directors. And he was the vice chair of this group. And this is a pretty prestigious deal. It represents all the 129 ADs from the NCAA Division I football subdivision, FBS. And so they influence how they influence the rules of college sports and how they're enacted and implemented. And they're the ones that decide, you know, how college football is governed. And this is a pretty big deal. And Mark Hollis is an ambitious person, DB. He's ambitious. He's smart. A lot of people view Mark Hollis as the next head of the NCAA. Whenever Mark Emmert steps down, they view him as the next head of that position, the next logical step in Mark Hollis's career. Why does a bright, smart, ambitious man like Mark Hollis step down from a position like this? Now, he says it's for personal reasons. I'm not necessarily buying that. Are you, DB?
No, I'm not buying the personal reasons either. I think I told you offline, Tashwell, that my feeling about this is that there's a lot going on with Michigan State right now that's not good with the premier sport. Football just had a worse season in a long time. The women's basketball team is struggling. Susie Merchant's health is not good at the moment. The basketball team is going through its struggles. And then the hockey team, well, that goes without saying. And so I feel like maybe Mark Hollis wants to sort of tend to the garden a little bit in East Lansing. And I actually think it's a smart move on his part to not have his full attention elsewhere but on Michigan State for the moment.
See, when I saw this, and you can vouch for this, my instant reaction was Tom Anastas is done at Michigan State. Mark Hollis knows he's going to have this is exactly what I said. I sent you a text message, and my text message is Anastas is done. And I take no glee in suggesting or saying that, but that was my immediate response, was Anastas is done. Mark Hollis knows that he's going to be on a head coaching search coming up, and that's going to take a lot of time and effort, and he's on this NCAA committee. Well, he's on the selection committee, right? And I'm already annoyed with him over that, and we'll get to that later in the show. And so he's got to take time away from that. I believe this is his last year in doing this. But yeah, and then you have the unexpected health problem with Susie Merchant. You're correct. And then I wonder about other things, DB, like, you know, maybe what's going on with some of the other programs that we don't keep an eye on, like the wrestling program and the softball team, and all sorts of stuff going on in Michigan State. But this hockey thing, got to be first and foremost in his mind. If he's thinking, you want to know what? I'm going to be conducting a job search here. I don't have time for this. This seems to me the most likely reason for him to come back.
Well, I buy that theory completely. I think that's one of many things. You know, there was a time here where the football recruiting, and again, we don't get into recruiting on this show, but there was a time, at least until recently, where the football recruiting was looking dismal. I think that's actually turned around a little bit based on what I've been reading. The hockey thing is a huge problem, and I think maybe, finally, to your point, Mark Hollis understands that it's time to maybe move the Michigan State hockey program in another direction. And then I think overall, just, you know, Susie Merchant is a very valuable coach with Michigan State. And I know Mark Hollis cares about every single coach at Michigan State, not just the premier sports. And he probably wants to make sure that out of the goodness of his heart that Susie Merchant is, number one, okay, and that her players are okay, and that the women's basketball team is in a good spot because they've been struggling a little bit too without her.
Yeah, and then the other aspect of it is Mark Hollis essentially oversaw the rise of the Michigan State athletic department, right? And he doesn't want to be the person that oversees its demise as well. And
he might have to fire himself, just like Mark D'Antonio said after this fall. He said he was looking for a new coach himself. We're going to start over again. It was rather funny. It was like he was firing himself.
Yeah,
it was kind of Donald Trumpian. It was kind of like Trump, like, will impeach himself and then put himself back in office.
Well, yes, but only if the crowd sizes are big enough. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. This is a very intriguing move for Hollis. The other part, which we can't dismiss, DB, is Hollis has taken an interesting approach to his role in the NCAA Men's Basketball Committee. He actually flies all over the country to see games. And as a fellow frequent flyer, let me tell you, that takes a toll on your body. When you're constantly on airplanes flying in and out of places, and look, Hollis is going first class. Satchmo ain't going first class. Let's make that clear. But still, when you're living life, when you're living life in an airplane in a suitcase, and it doesn't matter how nice the flight attendants are, and it doesn't matter if they give you like the greatest birthday cake ever for your birthday, because right, you happen to be flying that day, they feel bad for you. It still takes a toll on your body, and that's just sort of the way it works. And part of him might be tired and say, you want to know what? Enough. I've got enough Hilton honors points. I don't need any more.
I can see that. Satchmo, for the layperson, though, what is Michigan State University gain by Hollis being on all these different committees?
Actually, they gain a great deal of influence and prestige. within the NCAA and within the rulemaking process. In addition to that, they're actually, Michigan State's actually making rules. Like, they have someone from Michigan State making the rules that govern the sport, the game, and how it's run. And so when you have someone from your institution doing that, you have someone creating and enforcing rules that are favorable to and look that come from Michigan State culture and are favorable to Michigan State culture. So instead of creating rules that allow Jim Harbaugh to jet all over Europe with his team, you actually get rules that are consistent with Michigan State culture, which is look out for the students, look out for the students' family, create a family atmosphere, keep the health of the student and welfare of the student well-being in mind, and those sorts of things, right? And so, and then you worry legitimately about the costs of things, right? And the cost of compliance and whether you're creating rules that universities can abide by. It's easy for, let's just say, an Alabama or a University of Michigan or an Ohio State to propose a set of rules. They don't have fiscal constraints they have to worry about. But most universities do. Michigan State has fiscal constraints they have to worry about. Oklahoma State has fiscal constraints they have to worry about. When you propose rules that have a significant cost factor associated with it, you want people who share the same values making those rules. Otherwise, the rules are going to be tilted in favor of one set of schools or the other. And so if you've got the University of Texas and Alabama and Ohio State and the University of Michigan making the rules, well, they don't care. They've got oodles of cash. They're not going to make rules that benefit schools that have fiscal constraints. But if you have the Michigan States of the world and the Purdue's of the world and the UCLA's and those schools make the rules, where you're going to get a different culture coming out, and that's important.
Interesting. Maybe it's time then for Mark Hollis to have a right-hand man in the athletic office, and maybe that person would be Tom Anastas.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that I think it makes sense for there to be a clear line of succession in the athletic director's office, in the athletic department, I should say. That way, when Mark Hollis isn't there and he's jetting off to do all of these different things, there's a sense of direction and there's a sense of leadership. And that's important. And Anastas would be a natural candidate for something like that. Because he was the head of the CCHA. He's a natural administrator. He's really good at that. And so though that's something that actually I think would look good and he would be good at. And I think people would respond and respect that. So, yeah, I think that's a possibility without a doubt, which gets us realistically, DB, let's transition. They call this a professional segue. Transition into the state of the Michigan State hockey team. They got their first Big Ten win of the season. They beat the University of Michigan, and then they tied them and lost in overtime the following day at the Brunson Center, and they went over to Yost and beat them. What is their record, TB? It's pretty dismal, actually.
Well, they have one Big Ten win. And
yes.
They're definitely in last place in the six Big Ten teams. I think they have four overall wins, but I'm checking that as we're talking.
I was on the Michigan State hockey thing. Here we go.
Okay, I'm sorry. They have five wins, 15 losses, and two ties.
1-6-1 in conference. 2-7-1 at home and 3-6-1 away from home, 0-2 in neutral site.
It's abysmal.
It's abysmal. They really have, if you take a look at their skaters, they really have only one difference maker. I'm going to their roster right now, but it's the guy that carries the puck in the power play and really sets things up.
Mason Appleton?
No, not Mason Appleton. I will tell you in a second. Mason Appleton is a good player, but I'm talking a difference player, difference maker.
The freshman, Hirose.
Yeah, he's not a defenseman. He's a forward. But to me, I've been watching. He's the real difference maker on that team. He's able to – he carries the puck like a pro, right? He skates up ice. He's got good speed. He's strong on the puck. But he's also able to hold that puck for that extra second, that extra beat, and let the play develop around him, find the right person to pass to, make the right pass. He's a special player, DB. And if you think about it, how long has Onassis been here? 5 years? 6 years?
He is in year number six now.
He's in year number six. Hirose's the first difference maker he's had that he's recruited himself. That's not good.
No. That's not good at all.
Hirose's the only player on this roster that every other school in the country would be knocking on the door, beating, trying to kidnap. It'd be like Liam Neeson in one of those movies. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, look, Appleton's nice. I'm not saying he's not a good player. He's a nice player, but Hirose's a difference maker, and that's what you need.
Yeah, they have. I'm counting through here. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6. They have about 7 seniors. And to be honest, there might be one or two of them that are, decent players like Joe Cox. Otherwise, the seniors they have on the team make no difference at all. The Spartans are terrible on special teams. And it gets to this, and it's not really a recruiting thing to me. I mean, sure, that's part of it, but when teams keep making the same mistakes over again and keep playing the same way and they don't look like they have an identity. Spartan hockey team had identities. When Ron Mason was the coach, you'll remember the offensive Spartans, the powerhouse offenses in the 80s. And then Ron flipped it. He adapted his style into the 90s. And by the end of his time at Michigan State, they were one of the best defensive teams in college hockey with one of the best goalies in college hockey, Ryan Miller. And playing defense was a hallmark of Michigan State hockey by the end of the time that Mason was the coach. The Spartans had an identity you knew one way or the other. I don't see it at all with Tom Onassis' teams whatsoever. Not one bit. Not ever.
Yeah, it's not only do they have not have an identity, right? If you take a look at both their penalty kill and their power play, it just lacks basic fundamental play. The Spartan hockey team doesn't move the puck quickly, at least not that I've noticed on the power play, have you? I mean, that puck sticks. It doesn't move that fast. They've only got one guy, Hirose, that can actually carry it into the zone. And then on the penalty kill, man, that puck moves. I mean, other teams have no problem moving that puck side to side. No problem getting the diagonal pass in there. I mean, it's just whatever other teams want on the power play, they're able to get against Michigan State. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's extremely frustrating. And the Spartans haven't figured out, if I was a coach in this situation and again, the Spartans decided to go after a coach who didn't have any bench experience. I hear people on some of the blogs say, well, he was the coach at U of M Dearborn. Folks, the coach at U of M Dearborn, that was a club team, and it was also for like a year or two, way back in like 1989 and 90. I mean, that was a long time ago. Tom Onassis is a marketing guy. He is an athletic director, administrator. He was a great commissioner of the CCHA. There was no doubt about that. He understands how to present the game. I've never thought, and you and I, we can rewind the podcast to about 6 years ago when they hired him. He's not a guy that coaches a team. He had no experience from anywhere. And you just can't rest your team after a Rick Connolly with someone with no experience at all in coaching. That's just, this is what happens. So this is like a Matt Millen thing.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's just a bad situation, and I have a feeling this Hollis resignation from this committee as vice chair is because he's coming back to East Lansing and he's going to be conducting a job search. And I just don't see any way around. I mean, if you take a look at the rest of the schedule for the Michigan State hockey team, you tell me where you see wins, right? We'll just go through the rest of the schedule here. You got Wisconsin coming up on Friday.
At home, yeah.
Friday, February 3rd. I mean, is that a win? No.
They didn't play very well against Wisconsin in Madison, so it doesn't give me any reason to believe they could beat Wisconsin, no. Maybe they get a point out of a shootout. That's about it.
All right, so if you're not seeing it against Wisconsin, you got two games at home against them. All right, then on to the Joe against Michigan.
Okay, maybe. Michigan's kind of a mediocre bunch this year, so that's not out of the question.
All right. So at least the Wisconsin and Michigan games maybe aren't out of the question. Ohio State?
Ohio State is really coming on this year, Satchmo. At the current time, I would say no. They're hot right now. They just swept number one Penn State.
Speaking of number one Penn State, they come on right after Ohio State.
Yeah, in one, two losses. Bring it up, two losses.
All right, so two losses against Ohio State, two losses against Penn State, then on to Columbus.
I'd say two losses against Ohio State.
And then on to Minnesota?
On the road, right?
Yeah.
The only way the Spartans win that is if Minnesota's like clinched the Big Ten, and then maybe they don't take the Spartans seriously one night. So, otherwise, losses.
So basically, we're looking at this and we're saying, yeah, maybe three wins the rest of the way. You know, maybe they get one against Michigan, one against Wisconsin, and maybe steal one somewhere.
Yeah, that's about it.
That's
three
not good.
Wins and a tie and something else. Yeah, it isn't good at all. It's what we sort of thought, you know, this team was going to go in one direction or the other after the North Dakota series, and I was talking them up for the first time. I thought, wow, even Anastas was not happy with the Spartans even after that North Dakota series, surprisingly. And so then it goes into that Minnesota series, and the Spartans seemed a telling sign of a team that doesn't seem to get it or improve is they just keep kind of losing the same way each time.
Yep.
They lost 5-1 twice to Wisconsin. They lost 4-2 twice to Minnesota. They lost in similar fashion to Penn State. I don't remember the scores. They might have got a couple more goals one night on Penn State. That was about it. It's frustrating.
Yeah, they lost 5-2 and 5-3.
Yeah, it sucks. We bleed Michigan State sports. We both love Michigan State hockey. There's a lot of people in Spartan Nation that love Michigan State hockey. But other schools are laughing at us, Satchmo. It's time. It's time. And I don't know if we do this here or we wait. But do we speculate again? Do we offer advice here to Mark Hollis as to what he needs? Or do we just sort of wait and see what happens?
I think we wait and see what happens, right? The interesting thing, and this is wrap this up with hockey note here, and then it'll be a professional segue into college hoops, is Tom Anastas insists that this team is getting better. Do you buy that?
I don't see that, Satchmo, when I rewind these games. I see the same things happening that have been happening for the last 2, 3, 4 years. You know, when Tom Anastas first took over the program from Rick Conley, that's different in year two and even a little in year three, but then you turn the corner at some point, and then year four, five, and six, you want upward mobility. You want to be saying, okay, Michigan State should be above 500 playing hockey right now. They should be able to, you know, any team that comes into Munn should be at this point now, afraid to come into Munn. And when Michigan State goes on the road, they know they're in for a fight. They might not win every game, but the Spartans are going to battle to the end. And I don't see that battle. I don't see that identity. I see the same mistakes happening over and over again. It's a team that seems lost, and they can't figure out what they are.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I mean, though, I will say this, and I've watched a few games recently. They do at for stretches, whether it's for a period or whether it's for 5 minutes or whether it's for 10 minutes, they're able to put together stretches where they carry the play. And whether it's with an aggressive forecheck or keeping the other team's offense on the perimeter, 5-on-5 or whatever it is, there are stretches where they look like, wow, this is a really good hockey team. But the problem is those stretches are overshadowed by much longer stretches where they're just dominating.
Yeah.
And the balance isn't right, right? If it looks like they're competitive on every shift, you could say, yeah, this team is getting definitively getting better. The problem is they're really good for like 10 minutes or maybe 15 minutes in a game, but the other 35 minutes in the game, 45 minutes in the game, they're not good, DB. It's just not there. I mean, they're getting pounded. And that's the problem. And I agree with you. And I have a feeling the handwriting's on the wall. And we'll see what Hollis's decision is at the end of the season.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we'll come back to the whole, once we see what's happening, we'll come back to the whole who we think would make a good coach thing. I think we'll just sort of watch this play out.
Yeah, I think so. Another coach who insists his team is getting better, DB, professional segue, Tom Izzo.
Now, Tom Izzo is also having a hard time convincing me of that when one guy scores 30-some-odd points and everybody else does nothing.
But he is convinced that his team is getting better, that his team is playing better, that the team is on the rise, and that by the end of February or beginning of March, it'll be poised and ready right where it needs to make an NCAA tournament run. DB, I take it you are very skeptical.
I am feeling a high level of skepticism, Sashmo. This was another, just as you were going through the Spartan hockey schedule, earlier today I was going through the Spartan basketball schedule, and I was trying to come up with the magic number the Spartans need to get in the play-in game, Sashmo, because that's where they're headed right now, in my opinion.
All right, so before we get to that, let's consider the following. First of all, my guess would be, and I think we can fairly well agree on this point, is that the Michigan game at home this weekend, 1 o'clock CBS Sports, must win, yes?
Yes, I'll totally agree, yes. Lose and the last month here could be ugly.
Yes. So definitely a must win. All right. So we're agreed on that. So let's talk about this Michigan State. Because in ways, I do see the improvement. And in ways, I'm not sure the improvement matters. And so here's the ultimate problem. Right now, this Michigan State team, for as much as it's improving and as much as it's getting better, it's tough for this Michigan State team to be really good because their front court is so limited. DB, you've got one player that's 6'8", and Nick Ward. You've got a 6'6", Kenny Goins, and then you've got Miles Bridges. That's it. That's your size.
Yeah.
6'7". That's your size. Nick Ward gets into foul trouble. Kenny Goins gets into foul trouble. You're in with 6'5", Matt Van Dyke. The absence of Gavin Schillett and Ben Carter is really hampering. Look, it's not their fault. They got injured and they tore up their knees. This is not the fault of those players. But the fact of the matter is, Michigan State doesn't have the size to compete in the Big Ten right now.
No, not at all. I think we and everybody else in Spartan Nation knew this was going to be a problem at the beginning of the year when you don't have your big men. But we've seen it in game after game after game. Nothing is surprising when the other team has a size advantage over the Spartans. They're just going to pound the Spartans. And
yeah.
Good luck after that.
Yeah, because even a team like Penn State, right, which is not a very good basketball team, but you want to know what they have? They have big players up front and big athletic players up front. So that means they're going to be able to crash the board. That means they're going to be able to keep their team in it. It's something Michigan State doesn't have. They struggle on the board, right? And it's hard, especially when you're counting on fast break points to lead the way. And Michigan State really wants to run. You can't run if you can't rebound.
Yeah.
And I think it was against Purdue. They went the first 25, 26 minutes of the game without an offensive rebound. And by that point, Purdue had already had 10 or 12.
Those are basic Tomlinville hallmarks that they're just not happening. And without that size, and then without the other players chipping in a little bit, it's frustrating. And here you have this player in Bridges who he's really starting to break out now. I mean, I was shocked when it was all said and done the other night when I looked at the box score and he was the only Spartan in double figures. I'm not even sure how we were even in the game.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. So first of all, Michigan State actually played a pretty good basketball game against Purdue. All right, not a great basketball game, but
they were tied at halftime. They were in the game for a bit.
Yeah.
Into the second half. Yeah.
Yeah, they played a reasonably good game against Purdue. The problem is Michigan State has such a low margin for error that if they don't play a perfect game, they're not going to win.
Right.
So that's the first thing. The second thing, and this is really problematic, is that you take a player like Bridges, as good as Bridges was in that game, I thought he needed to be better. And the reason I say that, and this is really weird, Miles Bridges can improve right now if you take a look at his game. Miles Bridges has two key areas in which to improve. One is as a rebounder. Yes, I know he grabs a lot of rebounds. All right, he does. He gets a lot of rebounds. But if you take a look at the type of rebounds he gets, he doesn't get the tough rebounds in a crowd, or he doesn't get what I call rebounds out of his zone. He gets the rebounds that are in his area. But he doesn't get the rebounds that might be a little out of his zone and go get them. The really good rebounders do that. And as Michigan State's top athlete down low, he has to get some of those rebounds. That's the first thing. And you might say you're nitpicking. You want to know what? Michigan State needs his out of Bridges, A. And B, he's a freshman. Freshmen don't know how to do these things. Like two criticisms of Bridges, there's things that freshmen are going to struggle with. And this is one of those things that if he spends 2 years in the program, he'll be really good at it. And if you listen to Izzo as a head coach, he talks about things, rebounds in your own zone, rebounds outside of your zone. And it's rebounds outside of your zone that define what you're a good rebounder. The second thing that Bridges needs to work on is understanding the shot clock. Shot clock in game situations, right? And so what we saw in the Purdue game, and this happened on a fairly regular basis, is we'd be in a late clock situation, and you would see Tum Tum Nairn running a pick and roll with Kenny Goins. Who wants that in a late clock situation? Seriously? Now, excuse me, it worked. I think Kenny Goins got a bucket, and Tum Tum got a bucket. But those are situations where you really want Miles Bridges to come get the ball or come get involved in pick and roll action or be more than an option that's just standing out in the corner. And so understanding clock and game situations, right? And this is something that's not easy for a freshman to get and learn. So he has to understand when to be assertive and when to hold back. And that stuff is going to come as this season goes along. And this is where those seven games that Miles Bridges missed, this is where it really hurts, is in that situation. Because those are seven games he could have had to figure these sorts of things out, and he didn't have those games. So now he's trying to catch up. And so what Michigan State needs, and I think they'll start to get, as Izzo figures it out some, is you'll start to see a more assertive Miles Bridges that in late clock situations. Because right now there are two people you want making decisions with the basketball late in the shot clock right now. You want Cassius Winston and you want Miles Bridges. Those are the two people you want with the ball late in the clock. Right. So and that's pretty much the list. So that's the first. The second thing that's happened that's going to be tough is, look, Nick Ward is a freshman, and the Big Ten is starting to figure Nick Ward out. They're starting to figure out how to double team him. They're starting to figure out how to play. He's still going to get some, but now he's got to figure things out himself. And so these are the normal freshman difficulties that he's got to go through, and how quickly he goes through will determine how good this Michigan State team is. And then finally, Langford, DB, is a good basketball player, and he is too good not to run offense for. And so you almost want to see Michigan State run those screens, slip screen, run those screens, run those baseline screens, try almost like the way you would Sean Respert, and like force him to shoot the ball coming off the screen to get the shot, because he's that good, and figure out ways to get the offense around. I think if they could do those three things, all right, you've got a shot at the bubble. Because let's take a look at the schedule, BB. Because one of the things Michigan State has to start doing is beat the teams they're supposed to beat. All right, so Michigan at home, they need to win that game. They need to go to Nebraska. Nebraska's a good basketball team. Michigan State needs to go to Nebraska and win that game. Right? They need to go into Ann Arbor and win that game. Iowa, they need to win that game. Ohio State at home, payback. They need to win that game. They're not beating Purdue and West Lafayette. Not, that's just not happening. They might lose that game by 30. They need to beat Nebraska at home after that. The two games against Wisconsin, write them off as losses right now.
Yeah, they only play Wisconsin once, actually.
No, I got them twice on this schedule.
No. They play Wisconsin it's an undetermined date. It's either going to be February 25th or 26th, I believe. But it's a home game at Breslin, but it's just a one-off with the Badgers.
Okay, well, I'm still writing it off as a loss. Then at Illinois, got to win that game. And then at Maryland, who knows? I want them to win just to shut Maryland fans up. But
that's going to be a tough game. I kind of feel like I maybe only see two or three wins out of the rest of this schedule, basketball.
It could be. It could be dicey because, look, Michigan State hasn't shown an ability to go on the road and win, BB. That's the bottom line.
Other than the Minnesota game, right.
Yeah, and that was a miracle comeback. And until Michigan State shows that ability, the ability to go on the road and win a game, and this looks like a 500 team in conference.
Yeah.
And is a 500 team in conference going to be good enough to reach the NCAA tournament?
No.
I don't think so.
No. I mean, my theory is this. If the Spartans can get around, even, you know, including the Big Ten tournament, the Spartans got around 19 or 20 wins, they're in. Spartans are around 18. They're in the play-in game. But anything south of 18, I think they're out unless there's some really crazy things. A 17-win overall Michigan State team in the play-in game, maybe, but I'm not sure about that. I think you've got to be at 18.
That means right now Michigan State should be rooting hard for Gonzaga. Because Gonzaga's going to the tournament regardless of what happens the rest of the season. And they might even go to the tournament as a one seed. But if they lose in their tournament, that's a bid steal right there. So Michigan State right now is rooting hard for Gonzaga to win their tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, the Spartans need anyone in the middle of the pack with them to be worse than them and have all the favorites win their conferences and the teams they played earlier in the year to be really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Purdue and Wisconsin are just too good for Michigan State. I actually believe this. I believe if Schilling and Carter were healthy, Michigan State beats Purdue. And doesn't just beat Purdue, but wins the game pretty handily.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think the Spartans handle their own against, you know, with Schilling and Carter in there, absolutely. They still lose a few games. You know, they go on the road probably still and lose a tough game at Purdue. And, you know, they may wind up, you know, losing to Wisconsin. And, you know, who knows? But we're not even talking about missing the NCAA tournament right now.
No, they don't lose to Penn State with Schilling and Carter.
No, they don't lose to Penn State. They might have beaten Duke earlier in the year with Schilling and Carter. And, maybe the Baylor thing doesn't happen either and the Arizona thing. I mean, there's a bunch of things you can turn around and take back the other way.
Northeastern proved what size does, right? Michigan State didn't have any size to counteract Northeastern.
Yeah, it's size all the way. It's size all the way. I mean, that's a pure thing. Yeah, one other question I wanted to ask you, Dashwell. This is just a wide angle view of Tom Izzo. I notice sometimes, and just the way I feel about Tom Izzo. Look, I am not in any way, shape, or form questioning Tom Izzo. I think he's one of the greatest coaches in Spartan history, let alone just basketball history. But I feel like sometimes Izzo doesn't adjust his style a little bit to the players he recruits. And the example that I give is Duke. Mike Krzyzewski has a system, but Mike Krzyzewski also tweaks it even on the fly a little bit based on what his players can do. And I'm just wondering, Satchmo, your thoughts on does Izzo need to maybe, as he settles into the later part of his career when he's recruiting these players, rather than just put square pegs in round holes, start to look at these guys' abilities and say, okay, this guy's a good fit on this team, but let's structure the way we play on offense and defense related to this guy. There's fundamental things and then there's abilities. Does my question make sense?
Yeah, your question makes sense. I just disagree with you on the answer. And here's why. Tom Izzo, everyone views Tom Izzo as a defensive genius and a rebounding genius, right? That Michigan State is all about rebounding defense and toughness. And yes, that's the identity of the program. But it also does Tom Izzo a great disservice because when you take a look at Tom Izzo is one of the great offensive tacticians of the game. And what makes Izzo great, and I truly believe this, Izzo's almost Belichickian in the way he prepares his offenses for games. In that they don't really run a system. I mean, they do have a system. They've got plays, they've got screens, cutters, all those sorts of things. They actually run some of the most sophisticated offense you see in college basketball. It's really remarkable how sophisticated the offense is. And maybe it needs to be simplified for these freshmen, and maybe that's a problem that needs to be addressed. But he's never had to coach these many freshmen before playing together at the same time. But that said, he runs really sophisticated offense that plays to the strength of his personnel. And what Izzo does more than any other coach in college basketball is he creates individual game plans for every team. And this has been part of the problem this year, is with all these freshmen playing together, they're not used to following the scouting reports, right? Usually Tom Izzo's got a mix of freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors. And the juniors and seniors who are expected to lead the way are really good at following the scouting reports. And they're usually also the most talented and best players on the team. This year, his best players are his freshmen. and they're not really good at reading the scout reports. I mean, they read them and they retain them, but they're not good at following them. And so they end up on the wrong shoulder, the wrong guy, or they leave the go under the screen at the wrong moment, these sorts of things. These are all freshman mistakes that you don't and you see freshmen in other schools making these mistakes. The freshmen at Kentucky make these mistakes. The freshmen at Duke make these mistakes. All these mistakes are made. But Michigan State's getting punished by these mistakes because they have such little margin of error because of the Schilling and Carter injuries. And so, but what Izzo does better than anyone is for every team, both defensively and offensively, they come up, and it's very Belichickian in nature, they come up with individualized game plans. And their players have been historically so good at absorbing those game plans and following those game plans that they're really tough to play against. The problem this year is they're not as good. They're simply not as good at absorbing those game plans. And so I was going to save this question for fact or alternative fact, but since we're talking college basketball, I'll throw it out there now, TV. Fact or alternative fact? Cassius Winston should be receiving more playing time.
Fact.
Why do you think it's a fact?
Well, I knew you would ask me that.
Unlike the ABC anchor that interviewed Donald Trump, Satchel asks the tough questions.
Well, you tell me.
Oh, cop out. All right, so here's why. So Michigan State, without a doubt, is a significantly better team on offense with Cassius Winston in the game. Just as there's no question about it. His shot-making ability, his ability to get into the paint, his passing ability, everything about it makes Michigan State a better team on offense. And when Michigan State needs points, Cassius Winston needs to be on the floor. The problem is Cassius Winston is so bad at defense that it almost negates everything he's doing on the offensive end. In fact, if you were to look at just – if you were to view Cassius Winston as a hockey player and wonder what his plus-minus is, all right, I would view him almost as a minus player because his defense is so bad. Now, it's going to get better, right? He's going to figure it out. So this is – look, Cassius Winston's going through – Cassius Winston was never asked to play defense the way Tom Izzo's asking him to play defense now. No coach has ever asked him to do this. So he's actually playing defense for the first time in his life. And when you do something for the first time in your life, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to screw things up. And it's going to be a mess. And it's all of those things with Cassius Winston on defense right now. On offense, he's brilliant. And so I would say it's an alternative fact. I think Cassius Winston needs his minutes, and he needs to be on the floor to make that Michigan State offense run. But his defense is bad enough that he can't be the floor general, not right now. Because right now, when he's on the floor, man, they pick on him. And he's trying to shut down other team guards, and they're just lighting him up. He goes under screens. He turns the wrong way. He makes the wrong slide, loses track of his man. All sorts of bad things happen when he's out there. And he's getting better, but he was just so bad to begin with defensively that, I mean, it's a long uphill climb just to be decent.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of defense, that's where I was struggling with the answer. I mean, I think that Winston can improve, and Izzo's the right coach to help with that. But, yeah, it's a catch-22 with him on the floor.
Yeah, it absolutely is a catch-22 with him on the floor. I mean, I believe ultimately in the end, I mean, you're going to see Cassius Winston's minutes are really going to be determined by how badly they need his offense. In games where they need his offense, and it's going to be a lot of games, he's going to be out there a lot. And in games where they can afford to have him on the bench, he's going to be on the bench because the defense unless he improves on the defensive end, then in which case he's going to be out there all the time. But until then, it's going to be a struggle.
Also, you know, the other thing that strikes me is, to your point earlier about the lineup, it's a bunch of guards and just, you know, two or three forwards.
Who else are they going to play?
Kind of scary. Well, I know, but just where's the depth on this team? Where are the other big, you know?
Well, let's get into that. So Javon Bess and Marvin Clark both transferred, right?
Yeah. Right.
And the reason they transferred is with Schilling and Carter, and then with Bridges and Nick Ward, they were thinking, we're not going to get any minutes. Is this a different team with Javon Bess and Marvin Clark?
Oh, absolutely.
There you go.
The Final Four team, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now you're getting, now you're getting minutes in those positions that are quality minutes. And then, of course, you have the whole Aaron Harris thing, right? And Aaron Harris seems to have turned a corner and start to come around. But he needs to get better. He needs to be more of a consistent offensive threat. And I think he started to head in that direction. I think he's turning the corner. And the better Aaron Harris plays, the better it is going to be for this Michigan State team.
Right.
And if Matt McQuaid could ever get it going. But I'll tell you what, Alvin Ellis, I like Alvin Ellis. I think Alvin Ellis has been a pleasant
surprise. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that on Alvin Ellis. Yes.
All right. One other college basketball note, DB, and this is why Satchmo was annoyed with Mark Hollis. The NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Selection Committee, of which Hollis is the head of, has decided to start acting like they're in college football. And this just drives me nuts. So on February 11th, they're going to unveil the top 16 seeds. Why? All right. Hollis says they want to unveil, like, show what they're thinking of as they're going through the seeding process. That's just annoying.
Yeah, this is like some sort of, like you said, BCS thing. I don't like
it. But the thing is, I don't like it when they do it in college football playoffs. They're like, well, these are the six teams in the New Year's Six mold as of this moment. Well, who cares? Because that's going to change every week until here on out. Why are you telling me this? And then
Okay if ESPN does that, but yeah.
Yeah, then everyone gets up in arms about who the six teams are and how it's going to play out. And then why did one team move up and one team move down and all of this nonsense, right? Why are you doing this? The beauty of NCAA basketball is 64 teams get into the tournament. Half of them are automatic qualifiers. The other half are at-large bid. We know the way this works. We know the process, all right? The speculation is half the fun. Why are you ruining this? The NCAA tournament is pretty much the perfect sports event. Why is Mark Hollis want to monkey with this?
Yeah, don't know. Unless he's just trying to get our minds off the election.
We are excited about giving the fans a glimpse to what the men's basketball committee is thinking at this point in the season and creating a buzz as we look towards Selection Sunday, Hollis said in a release statement. There's potential for quite a bit of movement until we do it for real March 12th, but this early peek will give everyone insight as to where the committee stands as we hit the stretch run for the regular season. Isn't that Joe Lunardi's job?
Yeah, we're going to put Joe Lunardi out of business.
Yeah.
I guess maybe that's not terribly a bad thing from that perspective.
What do they have against Joey Brackett? I mean, that's just not nice.
Joey Brackett can sit there and do that stuff because, you know, that's his job.
Yeah, and then this lends credence to this concept that, well, the NCAA committee's already decided things before they sit down and go over things, right? And why do you want to lend credence to that concept? It just bothers me.
Yeah.
I expect better out of Mark Hollis.
Yeah.
Just...
Well.
All right. Are you ready? Are you ready to play fact or alternative fact?
I am. I don't know if I'm very good at it, but I guess I have to live in a warped universe to be good at it.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Or alternative fact.
All right.
The local Starbucks is louder than the Big House.
Fact.
That is a fact. You are correct.
So you're referring to the local Starbucks near your own residence.
You can pick one. Anyone.
Oh, okay. Any Starbucks, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's restaurants in downtown D.C. on Friday night that are louder than the Big House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are.
As a matter of fact, a lot of sleep experts recently recommended that you go to University of Michigan Stadium if you'd like to get help with your insomnia.
Well, there you go. I've always found it a good place. I've always found it a good place to study if you were looking for quiet in the state of Michigan. All right. Fact or alternative fact? You'll like this one. Fact or alternative fact, Urban Meyer has switched to Domino's Pizza when he loses a football game.
I'm going to say fact.
Wrong. That is alternative fact, DB. He would never eat
still,
a pizza from
a
Ann Arbor.
Man, huh?
No, it's nothing to Papa John's. He would never switch you a pizza from Ann Arbor.
I thought maybe there was a photo somewhere that you had seen.
Fact or alternative fact? Miles Bridges is the best freshman player Michigan State's ever seen.
Say the end again.
Miles Bridges is the best freshman Michigan State's ever seen.
Ever seen?
Mm-hmm.
Alternative fact.
Yeah, I agree with you on alternative fact. You got to go with Magic, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And then Jason Richardson, pretty good. Zach Randolph, really good.
Zach Randolph, yep.
I mean, those are three that come right off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But Miles Bridges is really good. So
he is. He is. If we're thinking about a top 10 list at the end of the season, when we have some downtime, we could certainly go through that list, and he might get in the top 10.
Hmm. All right. Fact or alternative fact? The Michigan State baseball team is the most likely Spartan program to win a national championship next.
Fact.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's fact too.
Spartan baseball team is pretty good. And out of all the teams that we've been talking about on the podcast today, and we're not trying to dismiss anybody else, like golf or soccer or anyone, but it sure seems like Spartan baseball team might offer some hope this spring.
Yeah, it seems like the Spartan baseball team, at the very least, is trending in the right direction, right? To me, that's the most important thing, is that you've got a team that's trending in the right direction, and not only trending in the right direction, but consistently making the postseason. Well, Michigan State basketball consistently makes the postseason, but you know, they're making the postseason, they're making noise, they're getting better talent in there. Everything just feels like the attitude, the vibe around that program just seems better than the other ones, TV.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully they can cheer us up.
Yes. That would be good. Hopefully they can cheer us up. That would be good. Fact or alternative fact? It was actually Ted Cruz that tripped the basketball players and not Grayson Allen.
Alternative fact.
Yes, that is an alternative fact.
Ted Cruz.
I did.
Well, The Blinders.
Did you see, though, how Ted Cruz trolled Deadspin? This was fantastic. So apparently Ted Cruz has taken up playing basketball. And so Deadspin said it was willing to pay money for a photo of Ted Cruz playing basketball. So Cruz tweeted a picture of Grayson Allen playing. And Grayson Allen's a dead ringer for Ted Cruz. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, that is true. And now that you're talking about it, that's very true.
And who knew Ted Cruz had a sense of humor? Or whoever runs his social media account had a sense of humor. It was really well done. It was well played. Do you have any facts or alternative facts for me, David?
Fact or alternative fact? Fired by ESPN.
Oh. All right. We'll use this as a professional segue. I'm going to go with fact.
Yeah, me too.
All right. So let us just go on the record with what ESPN has said. All right. So ESPN said that Brett Musburger approached ESPN about retiring maybe 8 or 9 days before the bowl game. What was it? Who did Oklahoma play? Doesn't matter. Whoever Oklahoma played before Oklahoma's bowl game, approached him 8 or 9 days before, maybe even 10 days before, and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about retiring."
Yeah.
Brett Musburger goes on to call the bowl game. And in the course of the bowl game, he says the following about Joe Mixon, Oklahoma's running back, who was suspended for a year for punching his girlfriend at the time. And so he was suspended for a year. This was a couple of years ago. Video emerged this year prior to the bowl game that showed video of this. And it was a brutal assault. There's just no other word to describe it. It was terrifyingly brutal. And you even had the Oklahoma coach say, "You want to know what? If that had happened this year instead of a couple of years ago, we probably would have kicked them off the team." And which goes to indicate that he probably should have been kicked off the team 2 years ago. But regardless, and so Brett Musburger said about Mixon, he said, you know, I know this young man's had, you know, troubled past. He's gotten a second chance, and I hope he makes the most of it, and I wish him luck in the NFL. That's what he said. That's remarkably tone deaf. Just remarkably tone deaf. Nothing about the victim of the assault, Joe Mixon's assault, Mixon's assault, nothing about it, nothing about wishing her success, nothing about how brutal the attack was. And then when it blew up on social media, and Brett Musburger had a chance to walk the statement back or show some contrition or show some sympathy for the victim, he pretty much doubled down on his statement. Seemed just so grotesquely out of touch and out of tune with the time, DB, that people were wondering what's wrong with him. And then a couple weeks later, he up and announces that his last day we get the announcement that his last game with ESPN is going to be January 31st. It's going to be an SEC game of some sort. And that's it for the end of a great career. He doesn't get a swan song. He doesn't get a final farewell. He doesn't get any of those things. And ESPN says, "Hey, this was Brent's decision the entire way. He was with us as long as he wanted, but I'm not buying it." It's something just, I mean, at the very least, Brent's a professional, right? You figure he's at least going to finish out the college basketball season if it's actually his decision.
Yeah, his retirement, just all of a sudden, like that, after that comment, you know, there's this rush now to just sort of move people along, and I feel like Brett Musburger is a great announcer, and he entertains people. He's entertained us for a long time, and I think he deserves, you know, I understand when you get into contract disputes and things like that, but this wasn't that. This is just, I feel like this is an ESPN hose job.
It feels like that. Look, in the pantheon of broadcasting, Brett Musburger is one of the top four broadcasters of all time.
I agree.
It's a short – here's the list, right? It's a short list. It's Brett Musburger, Keith Jackson, Al Michaels, and Pat Summerall. That's your list. Everyone else is a cut below. And when Brett called the game, you knew it was an important game. His voice and his pipes and the way he called the game and the way he called the action gave you that visceral feeling that whatever you were watching was the most important sporting event in the moment. And he was versatile too. He called Indy 500s. He called soccer games, called basketball games, college basketball, college football. He was the host of the NFL Today on CBS for a long time. He was good.
He was good. Now, I could take issue with your list a little bit because you left a couple guys out that were great play-by-play people. Jim McKay was play-by-play. And then also, too, to some degree, at least on boxing, Howard Cosell was.
Yes, so I agree with that. So what I did was with Jim McKay's fantastic. The reason I left Jim McKay out is, to me, Jim McKay was much more than a play-by-play announcer. He was a true sports journalist. And when McKay was – and so, to me, he wasn't a pure play-by-play guy. He was good calling games. I don't think he was on the level of those other guys calling games, but his hosting of the Olympics and a worldwide sports, to me, is what distinguished Jim McKay as a sports person. Howard Cosell, you're right in that he was a fantastic boxing announcer. But I thought it was the group that made that thing go together on Monday Night Football. I don't think Howard Cosell was, you know, I don't think Howard Cosell is like a great play-by-play caller, but within that group, he was remarkable. So that's where I go with that. I mean, the guy that I hesitated leaving out of that group, and let's be clear, I did not put any baseball announcers in there. I didn't put baseball announcers in there for two reasons. Most baseball announcers are only baseball, and I feel like they don't get the chance to display that level of versatility that people like Brett Musburger and Pat Summerall displayed, right, in calling a bunch of sports. Al Michaels, too. I mean, they had the ability to call in a bunch of sports, and so that's why you don't get like a Vin Scully on the list, or you don't get an Ernie Harwell. As good as they were, they were baseball only. And additionally, baseball has simply lost its importance in the cultural relevance of our society. And so announcing those games isn't nearly as important as announcing college football or the NFL and doing some of these other sports. And so I'm aware that I just completely ignored baseball. It was a deliberate. I did deliberately, and so I get that. But no, I get what you're saying about Jim McKay. Look, I think Howard Cosell is a great announcer, but as a pure play-by-play guy, yeah, in boxing, it's just remarkable. But I don't think he rises to that level anywhere else.
Satchmo, this just in, America forgives you.
Ah, I'm glad America forgives me. You know, I have one thing going for me. I don't scotch tape my tie together so it flaps in the wind. So it doesn't flap in the wind.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's sort of an odd ending to a really good career.
Yeah, it's too bad. It just sort of like suddenly came like that. But Brett, this is not the first time Brent was sort of brushed aside. Now, I also read that is Brent really opening up a gambling service?
Yeah, he is, actually. He's opened up a health service in Vegas. Look, Brad Musburger has always been big into gambling, right? So he never shied away from point spreads. He never shied away from announcing what a point spread was, either in an interview going to the game. He said, you know, the experts have them at 6-point favorites or whatever. And he never shied away from point spreads in games, right? So Al Michaels would be really sly about it and try and sneak it into the game. Brad Musburger never tried to sneak it in the game. He would flat out say, he's like, why are they going for three? This is going to ruin the books in Vegas. He would just say stuff like that, right? He's always been into it. It's been a passion of his. He always knows what the number is. He's never been afraid to share it. And this actually feels like a natural for him. It really does. And so good for Brett. I mean, he's going to go do something that he loves to do. And I think he's going to have fun doing it. And he's not going to have to travel as much. And he'll retire to Vegas. Remember when Raleigh Massimino went out to coach the Rebels in UNLV? And these are rumors, so who knows if they're true or not, right? But there was a rumor that Raleigh Massimino didn't have to pay for a meal in Las Vegas, right? It was always common. And I have a feeling that Brett Musburger is going to have the same thing, right? Who's going to want to make Brett Musburger actually pay for his meal? Nobody. He's going to go and he's going to eat a lot of food and he's going to offer some gambling tips and he's going to have a good time and maybe get out and golf, and there's some great golf courses in Las Vegas. I think he's going to enjoy life. I don't think he's going to miss it.
No. It's just too bad. It's too bad that we don't get to hear Brent anymore. Maybe come back and do one game somewhere, somehow, sometime.
Yeah, it would be. It's just a shame he doesn't get a farewell game, right? Either a marquee college basketball game, or a marquee. CBS did a freaking season long farewell to Vern Lundquist, right? It just seems this whole goodbye just seems sort of inadequate for Brett Musburger.
So Vern Lundquist is he's officially done now. Is that correct?
He's done.
Well, that is also too bad. Vern Lundquist, another great broadcaster. I used to love when Vern Lundquist did the college basketball game, and you would hear him do the Sunday, CBS game.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah, Vern's another guy with a great set of pipes, right? I mean, they had the love listening to him. And so good for Vern on that front. And so, happy for Vern. And it's going to be weird. And so now, look, Brad Nessler's another good announcer, right? It's just opened up more space for Brad. And so good for Brad for getting the opportunity. I've been a big Brad Nessler fan for a long time.
Yeah, Brad Nessler. Is he going to be teamed with Gary Danielson for the SEC football?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that makes
CBS.
Sense. I mean, Brad Nessler is by far the best, college announcer around right now, and he's a throwback. A little bit. Brad Nessler reminds me a lot of sort of a cross between Pat Summerall and Keith Jackson.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
In a way, Keith Jackson and Brett Musburger were similar in that when you heard those two calling games, you knew it was the biggest event around. There was just no doubt about that.
Yeah.
No doubt about that whatsoever. Veering. As we go down nostalgia lane, what's your favorite Brett Musburger moment, by the way?
Oh, wow. Well, there's so many of them, and I remember when I was a kid, he was on the NFL Today. And he's been in a few movies. I think he was in Happy Gilmore, if I'm not mistaken. No, that was Vern Lundquist. But he was in Rocky, I think, in Rocky II, Brett Musburger. The one that I loved is a radio call Do you know which one I'm talking about?
No, which one? It's the Hail Mary?
Okay.
No.
It's an NBA Finals game where he exposes Tim Donaghy.
Really?
Yeah. So Mike, and I think Tim Donaghy was kind of like outed for what was going on when Shaq and Kobe were paired together with the Lakers back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And Mutzberger was doing the radio call on ESPN with Tim Legler. And during the broadcast, it was, I believe it was the Nets Lakers final that year. And one of the officials, and it was Donaghy, I believe, among them, came over to the scorer's table and right in front of Mutzberger asked the official scorer how many fouls Shaquille O'Neal had. And Brett Mutzberger, give him credit, he heard this and reported it to the audience on the air, and then he also had the sense to realize, wait a minute, the official's not supposed to ask a specific player's name. They can cross-check the scoreboard and say, is that correct that number 45 has that many fouls? But they specifically asked how many fouls did Shaquille O'Neal had. It was up to 5, and it was weird. And Mike and Mike both said it was weird after that game. And the Lakers, I believe, won the championship. They were in the middle of their little mini run there. And not long after that, Tim Donaghy's in trouble.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite, you know, Brett Mutzberger moments. And Mutzberger didn't indict Donaghy on the air, but he did ask Tim Legler, is the ref supposed to do that? And it was really more of a rhetorical question than it was. I mean, Mutzberger knew that. And he was calling out the officials right there on the air. They shouldn't have been doing that. And it was suspicious and strange. And so, yeah, I mean, Brent had some great moments. I think I know the one you're going to see.
You might. Does it involve the Ohio State Buckeyes?
Yes. The Jackaroot story.
Yes, the Jackaroot story.
Maurice Corrett.
Yes. It is my favorite all-time Brett Musburger story.
Maurice Corrett missing in action.
So Jackaroot went to the new library on the campus of Ohio State and gave a tour of this new library. It's like, what a great building. What the, how great the facilities are. And can you believe this? And this is just gorgeous. And look at all the, look at how well it's done. And Brett Musburger comes back with, I'm guessing you didn't fly Maurice Corrett there.
Oh my goodness, that still just makes me laugh. That just still makes me laugh.
Oh, and Jackaroot just started laughing on the air, and then Brett started laughing. Whoever called
oh.
the name, Brett was laughing, and it was just like laughter for 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's what Gary Danielson. Yeah, Gary Danielson was calling the games with Brett on ABC. At that time, they did a lot of the Big Ten. Gary Danielson did, and Brent, of course, a big Michigan State fan, a big Northwestern fan. You know, he was a Big Ten guy, basically. And yeah, that moment was priceless because they shut off their mics because they were laughing so much, and a couple plays went by, and I was on the floor. I mean, you knew that Brent Musburger had just. They were rolling with that one. I mean, Luke couldn't even talk. It was great. But that's how Brent Musburger was. He would say these things and get people laughing. He had such a knack for just spontaneity on the air.
Oh, it was fantastic. Then the other thing is, you're right, he was a Michigan State guy. He was a Big Ten guy. He went to Northwestern. He went to the Medill School of Journalism. And he was actually a columnist in Chicago, a newspaper columnist in Chicago before going into broadcast.
Right, yeah.
And so he has Big Ten roots, and he never shied away from those Big Ten roots. And there was a Michigan State, Ohio State game somewhere where they were talking about the band, and they were talking about how great that Ohio State band is. And Brent Musburger just hopped right into the middle of the discussion, and he goes, I don't know about this guy. And they were talking about how Ohio State's got the best band in the country. Look at the Spartan marching band. those guys look pretty snappy to me. He said, look at them high stepping onto the field. And it was just it was just like the oddest place for Brett Musburger to interject himself into the conversation. But he's such a college football fan, and he understands the pageantry behind it. He understands what people like about it. And he was really into it, and he was really serious. He liked the Michigan State marching band. It was just one of those weird moments that only Brett Musburger could do, and it didn't seem out of place. It was just entertaining. And so, yeah, he has Big Ten roots. He had Midwestern roots, and he never shied away from it. When he called Big Ten games, his local knowledge was obvious. And what most people didn't know, though, was it was his roots, right? It's where he's from, and that's why he had that sort of knowledge. He's going to be missed. He's definitely going to be missed because he still had his fastball. And it's a shame, but he will be missed. Another nostalgia kick, DB, for us to go on. Mary Tyler Moore passed away.
Yes.
And
Mary Tyler Moore show. I was thinking about this today, Tash, but I'm going to guess people who are younger than 40 years old probably aren't as familiar with Mary Tyler Moore. Would I be correct in saying that?
Yeah, I would think so. I agree. I think 40 is the absolute cutoff, and I think you can probably go even higher than that and saying 45. No, I'm familiar with it. So 43.
I think maybe some of the some people in their late 30s. May have seen the Mary Tyler Moore show in the rerun.
Nickelodeon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's about it, though.
Yeah, that's about it. I think it went on the air in 70 or 71, somewhere in that. By the way, the CBS lineup, consider the CBS lineup for a while. It had the All in the Family. It had the Mary Tyler Moore show. It had Newhart. It had one other big show. All on in the same night. MASH. Think about that.
That's incredible.
That's phenomenal. All on the same night.
And then they had All in the Family and those other shows too, and the Carol Burnett Show and the Jeffersons and
Good
Times.
One night,
yeah, it was tremendous, that network in the 70s.
That network extended, but in one night, it could be the greatest television block of all time. All in the Family,
yeah.
MASH, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Newhart. How do you get better than that?
I don't even know.
All right, and now, you know, Thursday night TV, they're going to – the closest that you get to that, and this is the closest you get to it, is The Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, and Night Court, followed by, I guess, L.A. Law.
L.A. Law, and at one point, Hill Street Blues for a little bit.
And Hill Street
before
Blues,
L.A.
Yeah.
Law came up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. The closest you get to matching that.
Right. And then later swap out Night Court out of there with Seinfeld. Right.
Yeah, but by then, that Thursday Night lineup had lost its appeal, right? It wasn't nearly as powerful.
Right, that's true. Family Ties was gone. We had a different world in there a little bit. It wasn't the same, but yeah, it still was pretty good, but it wasn't as powerful, you're right.
Yeah, and so when you think about it, but then you have, and here's the thing about Mary Tyler Moore, right, is, first of all, she was amazing on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Right.
And with the signature, oh, Rob, but she was a remarkable actress. And then when you take a look at the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I think this is the part that people who are younger than us, DB, are going to struggle with a little bit, is that prior to the Mary Tyler Moore Show, there was the concept of a happy, single, professional woman didn't exist in pop culture TV. Up until that point, in pop culture, never mind TV, but in pop culture, up until that point, every female character, whether it was in the movies or on TV, and no matter how powerful the character, but every female character stood in definition to the man. So they were there to support the man, help the man, please the man, but the man was clearly the center of attention, the role. So they were playing the wife or the girlfriend or the mother or whatever. And the lives revolved around the man and the happiness of the man. And the man had the job and all that sort of stuff. Even if the woman had the job, it was about the man. This is the first time that TV depicted a character of a single woman. It was okay for her to be a single woman. And it was okay for her not to have a boyfriend. It was okay for her not to be married. And it was okay for her to have a job and be worried about the job and want to get the good job and negotiate a raise and negotiate all of those sorts of things, right? This is groundbreaking TV. In addition, she was surrounded by other strong women on the show. And it was the men that were the buffoons on the show, right? It wasn't the women. It was like Ted Baxter was the clown. It were the women that were the competent professionals who were really good at things. And this was groundbreaking television when it came out. And when you take a look at women in the workplace now, for a lot of them, especially our age and older, a lot of them, Mary Tyler Moore was a signature moment in their lives. It was the moment that said, yes, you can do that. You can make it after all.
Yeah, it was a show of women's liberation, and it fit with the times when feminism was really coming on in the United States, and it was also just a damn funny show done by James L. Brooks, who went on to do Cheers, too.
Yeah, it was a damn funny show, and even though its politics in what's revolutionary in that standpoint, it didn't hit you over the head with it, right?
Right.
They didn't take a baseball bat here over the head. It was just presented as so completely normal that you didn't really think about it. You're like, oh, yeah, this makes perfect sense. And that in and of itself was revolutionary. And you're right. It was funny. Oh, my goodness. It was funny. And what? Rhoda was a spinoff of that, right? I think it had a couple other spinoffs, too.
Yeah. Rhoda was a spinoff. And then Lou Grant. Yeah.
Lou Grant. Yeah.
Asner had his own. That was sort of a dramedy kind of thing. I don't remember what Lou Grant did on the but I remember a drama show with that Asner as Lou Grant.
And go back to the Dick Van Dyke Show TV. How great was that cast? Dick Van Dyke, Mary Tyler Moore, Maury Amsterdam, what was the woman's name? I can't think of it right now. That's a fantastic cast.
Betty White was on that show, too, on the Mary Tyler Moore show.
Betty White was on the Mary Tyler
Moore. That was an all-star lineup. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a funny Saturday Night Live skit once in the mid-'80s where Lou Grant, Ed Asner, was the host of the show, and he comes back to the skit was a Mary Tyler Moore rerun, and Lou Grant was missing from the rerun, and they were wondering where he was. And then he comes back dressed in camouflage, and he's got paint on his face, and he's with these military guys, and they infiltrate the rerun to take Mary out of the rerun. They don't want her to be in it anymore. It's all done, and Mary won't leave. And Lou's like, you know, Billy Crystal was playing Ted Baxter. He's like, oh, don't shoot me, like that. It's a very funny skit, but what a great show that was. And I used to see it on Canadian television, you know, because in Detroit, when it was Rabbit Ears TV, yes, I'm old enough to remember Rabbit Ears TV, we could see sitcoms on the Canadian broadcast company. I don't know why the Mary Tyler Moore show was on. Usually somebody related to the show had to be Canadian.
Yeah,
I don't know if any of the actors in the show were.
Yeah, it doesn't strike me, but
maybe the producers were. I don't know, but yeah. Anyway,
yeah, it could be, or maybe Canada just wanted to feel part of a cultural moment, so they just threw it on the air.
oh my goodness!
Which is entirely
James L. Brooks was behind. You could arguably say three of the greatest shows in TV history, Cheers and the Mary Tyler Moore Show and The Simpsons.
Yeah, and then take a look at Carl Reiner in his body of work.
Oh, yeah.
All in the Family, and then he did the Dick Van Dyke Show. And this is seriously good stuff. I mean, powerful TV. It's remarkable. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It was... I think it's really hard for people to appreciate now just how good the writing was in those shows, because it was a time of cultural unrest, right? And so how do you deliver comedy to a mass market? So now you can make comedies for niche markets and you'll be successful. And so you can target, I mean, so your viewership doesn't have to be high. You can release it on Netflix. You can do all sorts of things. So you don't, this was groundbreaking television on network television. So you had to be able to draw millions of people in to watch it. Yet these shows managed to be truly brilliant while catering to the masses. And that's, you simply don't see a lot of that now. It's really hard to do.
Right.
So hats off to the Mary Tyler Moore Show. We're going to miss Mary Tyler Moore. She was one of a kind. And well, let me back up for a second. Are we going to miss Mary Tyler Moore, or are we missing Mary Richards?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, is this nostalgia for Mary Tyler Moore, or is this nostalgia for the character she
played? Well, she was Laura Petrie, too.
Yeah.
Another great character. You know what I think it is? I think it's nostalgia for losing people, you know, from that time period. Especially, you know, anyone that watched television, watching those that lineup of shows that you discussed, you know, we lose those people one by one, and it takes us back to a different place in time, a very different place in time.
And it takes us back to a place in time where watching TV and watching shows like that was more of a community event, more of a societal event, right?
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, those were true measurements of people watching those shows then at that time. The people really were, because there weren't other forms of entertainment in terms of, like, phones or cable TV or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're onto something there. Is there anything else we would like to discuss before we sign off, dude?
No, I think we can save some of our other – we have lots of weeks to go of the new administration here to any early thoughts about anything you've seen in the media related to it, or general comments about the one weekend.
The one weekend. So ultimately, and we can discuss this at another time, but we'll leave the question open. So the question ultimately becomes, is Trump the master media manipulator, which says, look at all these shiny objects over here while I do all of these things over there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the one theory of Trump. Or is Trump living in an alternate facts universe? Right? That appears to be the ultimate question. One thing we might do, DB, for a future podcast as we sort of plan on the air, we've got a scandal at Michigan State, DB, that we haven't talked about with this doctor.
Oh, yeah.
That's, yeah, ugly. It's ugly. But I think we're doing a disservice by not talking about it, but I think we need a third person to talk about it, and this being your lovely significant other. Because this sort of falls in her wheelhouse in terms
we
of
will, we will discuss that idea. I think she'll have to brush up on the case a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine. But in terms of Title IX and investigating and federal investigations in the universities and the whole thing, I think that would be actually a valuable point of view and perspective. And then we can sort of work our way backwards through the discussion on that. So it's actually it actually becomes a much more valuable discussion to have, because I think it's something that's worth talking about. I mean, we're not talking about it, and no one's really talking about it outside of the newspaper headlines. But I think at some point, I mean, we can't stick our head in the sand about it. We've got to talk about it. We've got to address it. And I think it makes sense to address it in that way.
Yeah, it cuts across the sports realm and the news realm, and it cuts across a lot of different issues, and it's a Michigan State thing, and it's also had the fortune, I think, of the election and the new administration to sort of bury it in the headline.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine if this had happened like in a non-election year, what the type of story this would be?
Oh, it would be it probably would be an ongoing national saga, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Nancy Grace would be talking about it every night, probably.
Could be the first Nancy Grace reference on Sparty Talk.
Yeah, have you ever seen that movie Wag the Dog?
I love that movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
Oh, yeah.
So when I watch these things, that movie enlightened me a lot. So, you know, now when I see these things being done by a presidential administration, even more than ever, I'm reminded of that movie as I see what's unfolded just in 1 week. I mean, it's the whole campaign, of course, but
yeah. And for those of you that haven't seen the movie, and this is not a spoiler alert because this movie came out so long ago, you can't really spoil it. It's the length to which people go to control the media narrative, right? And so, to the extent that you could create an absolute alternate universe with the same set of facts, if you understand how to control the media narrative. And that's what Wag the Dog does. And it is a brilliant movie. And it's hilarious, dude. You will sit down to watch it, and you just don't stop laughing until the end of the movie.
Yeah, it is fantastic. They create things. They present things as an image. You can see that, you know, these people that Donald Trump has in his administration that are real close to him are really sort of like his executive producer and producers and director, and they're actors. And this is like almost a little play they're putting on. And Donald Trump is really good at that. Whether you like Donald Trump and agree with him or hate him, you have to admit that he knows how to do this stuff. He's been doing it for a long time. Yeah, he knows how to. He himself is a brand. And so it's very interesting to watch unfold. Unfortunately, it's unfolding as the president of the United States.
Yes. So you lean toward the master manipulator of shiny objects side of the argument.
Yes. I think a Washington Post writer called it throwing out the dead cat so everybody looked at it.
All right.
And
so
it's absolutely fantastic. And CNN is hooked in every single time. I mean, they were all stuck on the voting fraud the other day while all the other stuff was going on. I was like, oh my gosh, you guys bought that one pretty fast.
All right.
Just when I think CNN has turned the corner, they've been fished in. Get the net.
All right, we will talk about that more on another episode, but I think
absolutely
now is a good time to wrap things up. And I think, you know, I think the Mary Tyler Moore Show is instructive in the sense that you will make it after all. We will make it after all, regardless of what happens.
That's right.
But on that note, hopefully Michigan State turns things around. We get on track for the NCAA tournament. They take the doubting Thomases out of us, and we'll see what happens with the rest of the hockey season. And we'll keep you updated on everything, all things Michigan State. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.